You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
It's the final stretch of 2022, and HRN needs your help. Become an HRN member with a donation of any amount at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Welcome to Inside Julia's Kitchen, the podcast of the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. I'm your host, Todd Shulkin, the Foundation's Executive Director. Our show takes you inside the Foundation's world to meet the talented people we have the great fortune of learning from all the time. On today's show, we welcome baker extraordinaire Frank Barron. In this episode, we'll talk to Frank about Paris in wintertime, his cookbook, Sweet Paris, and we'll hear Frank's Julia moment. Stay with us. We'll be right back. As always, we launch the conversation with an inspiration from Julia. Hard to think of a place that inspired Julia more than Paris. It was her first home in France, and it was the place where she learned to love cooking. It's also the place where she applied American ingenuity and work ethic to mastering French food. And what could be better than taking inspiration from one of the most romanticized times of the year in Paris, the holidays? In reality, Paris tends to empty out of Parisians during the festive season. But for those who remain, it can feel like you have the city to yourself. You just have to be more strategic about which cafes, bakeries, and restaurants are open, plan ahead for doing your shopping, and perhaps be more self-reliant in your tiny Parisian kitchen than at other times of the year. Given how much Julia loved the combination of great food and great company, it's easy to imagine her setting out a holiday spread on the Rue de Louvre as snowflakes gently fall along the Seine. Another Southern California native who's brought his own American perspective to Paris is Frank Barron. Born and raised in San Diego, Frank found his way to Paris when his partner was transferred there for work. Previously, he'd majored in art history at Berkeley and worked in fine art museums in San Francisco. Arriving in Paris without a work permit, Frank found salvation and belonging by baking American-inspired cakes, which garnered fans at local Parisian cafes and among Paris's expat community. Frank's passion for American-style baking, matched with French seasonal sensibilities, became a winning combination, taking off with his popular @CakeBoyParis Instagram. A self-taught baker, Frank's success led to his first cookbook, Sweet Paris, Seasonal Recipes from an American Baker in France. It includes more than 50 recipes that combine an American approach to cakes and pastry with the French mindset of using seasonal ingredients. Full disclosure, our own producer, Lauren Salkeld, worked with Frank on the book. But that means it also comes with her much sought-after seal of approval. Frank joins us today to tell us more about wintertime baking in Paris and how he's spending the holidays in the City of Light. Welcome to the podcast, Frank.
Thank you so much, Todd, for having me.
We're glad you could join us and excited to talk about Paris at the holidays. But before we get to the holidays, I was just curious, how did you end up becoming this, you know, sort of ambassador for American-style cakes in Paris? What was the path that led you there?
I love that title. Definitely love to think of myself as like a cultural cake attaché, spreading the buttercream love throughout France for sure. I guess it started, but when I moved here in 2012, I sort of committed that first year in Paris to trying as many French pastries as I could. Because when we moved here, we were only supposed to be here for 1 to 2 years, cut to 10 years later today. Wow. However, I decided that I was going to go out and just try as much pastry as I could while I was here. And I think after that first year, I sort of wound down my Parisian pastry love a bit and started to really crave a taste of home and realized that you really just couldn't find American-style cakes in Paris. It was a really rare thing to find, for example, a layer cake or a birthday-style cake or one of my personal favorites, a bundt cake. And I decided that I was just going to have to make them for myself. And that's how I started to get into baking. Before moving to Paris, I was not a baker. I never baked. I usually picked up my cakes and things at bakeries. And shout out to Miette in San Francisco. And I essentially started to teach myself how to properly make an American layer cake, which I didn't know how to do before. YouTube was instrumental in getting all of that right. But eventually I started to host friends to come over to my house to have cake parties. And one of those friends owned a cafe in my neighborhood in the Marais. And he was very impressed with a particular cake I made and asked if I could make one for his cafe. And of course, I was dumbfounded by that. And I said no. And I really protested. And I was like, I'm not a baker. I'm not a cake maker. I just did, you know, this is... And he really pressed me and eventually won me over. And I said, sure, it could be fun. And so I brought a cake to his cafe on a Saturday, and it was a big hit. And from that, doing that, saying yes to that one opportunity turned into something where a bunch of other cafe owners in Paris started to reach out to me and were like, hey, we saw that cake you made for Fondation Café. Could you make one for us? And I really, again, it kind of points to the fact that it really was hard to find that style of cake and sort of just big giant cakes smothered in buttercream. And of course, the expats here, American expats, and I might add like Canadian expats love that style of cake as well. So I just quickly started to accept that this is something that I was going to be doing, making cakes part-time and bringing them to all these various cafes around the city.
And I think one question I want to get into is Paris is not the easiest place to live logistically. While it's very romantic, it has challenges like similar to New York, maybe sometimes San Francisco. So how did you even like manage the equipment? Were you using French flour? Or did you have people send you stuff from the States? How did you even cope with the logistics?
So that is actually interesting because in the very beginning, I absolutely had so many cake fails because the flour here is completely different, as well as there's no such thing as separate baking powder and baking soda like we use in the States. It's usually sold together, combined in a small packet, so you can't really measure out the baking soda and baking powder. So there were a lot of flat cakes in the beginning. There were a lot of cake cave-ins that happened to me. And eventually, I actually took a trip to London via Eurostar, and just 2 hours away. And they have a Whole Foods, it's in London, luckily. And I did do some shopping for baking powder and baking supplies and brought them back. And I kept a little stash of that stuff at home. And so that was one way that I got around some of the ingredients I was using, that I was used to using. But eventually, my mom started sending me care packages with Trader Joe's supplies, which was like treasure to me.
So that actually gives you sort of a lock on the business because someone else in Paris can't just go out and easily find those ingredients. You need secret sources to ship you.
You really do. I got a lot of basically other bakers asking me, you know, what was I using? Where could they find vanilla, Nielsen Massey vanilla, for example, that I was bringing back from California. And I'm like, sorry, I went to London or I got it shipped to me from my family back home. But yes, those specialty ingredients were really treasured by me in the early stage because there just weren't really equivalents for American style baking that I was used to.
Yeah. And maybe just to underline it, that's the big difference. Like the French don't really eat cakes that are risen or like you said, layer cakes or use a lot of buttercream in the way that Americans or British or Canadian people would.
Absolutely. And not to mention all the candy decorations that we like to put on our baked goods a la rainbow sprinkles, which aren't really a thing here. I get this question asked of me a lot as to if the French don't use layer cakes for their birthday celebrations, what do they eat? And it's very simple, like fruit tarts are usually the normal sort of birthday cake celebration sweet, as well as maybe like a simple pound cake, which of course in the French mode is always very elegantly served. With like Chantilly whipped cream and whatever seasonal fruits that they're going to use alongside a slice of pound cake. But certainly it is not our six-tiered layer cakes covered in vanilla buttercream with candy sprinkles.
And I was going to say newsflash, the French don't tend to sing happy birthday to people in restaurants, nor would restaurant staffs do that.
100% correct.
Maybe there's one place in the Marais. And for those who don't know, the Marais is this historic district in Paris, which used to be much more modest, but has become super fashionable, but is also very international. It compared to maybe other parts of Paris in terms of the wide mixing of people who live there.
Absolutely. I've been witness to the 10-year evolution of the Marais, and it has changed quite a bit and has, for better or for worse, become a little more commercial, and some of the bigger brands and such have moved into the neighborhood. But it's still a very vibrant and sought-after neighborhood. On the weekends, Parisians from other neighborhoods love to come here and shop and get coffee. There's just a million specialty coffee shops and hip cafes and beautiful boutiques. So it's a nice neighborhood to live in as far as like walking out of your front door and having everything right at your front door.
Including terrific falafel.
Oh, yes. We cannot discount Rue de Rosier in the home of some of the best falafel in the city.
And do you want to give a shout out to, are there bakeries in the Marais that are still carrying your cakes or sometimes have your cakes?
You know, I have not had a cake pop up at a cafe in quite some time. And however, the first one to officially carry one of my cakes is still around. It's called Boot Cafe on Rue de Pont-aux-Choux in the 3rd. That's the 3rd arrondissement. And Rue de Pont-aux-Choux, I always have a giggle at that because that's the street, the bridge of cabbages.
So, that's a great name.
It's such a great name. There's some really great street names in the Marais, and that's one. And Boot Café has the privilege of being the tiniest coffee shop in all of Paris. There are just two tables inside and owned by an American. And they were the first to officially sort of have my cake and like advertise it as like, we have a cake boy cake here for the weekend. They're still around, they're still open. A lot of the first places that I did have cake pop-ups, they're no longer around or the owners have closed up shop. So I'm happy that Boot is still around.
So is much of your baking now more on demand and like kind of catering driven?
Yes, there was, I would say that I did the cake pop-ups around Paris for probably 1 to 2 years. And it wasn't every weekend. It was sort of like once or twice a month I would do a cake for some cafe. But it slowly kind of transitioned into being for private order, birthday cakes and celebration things. And then that sort of morphed into me deciding that I wanted to launch these cake decorating workshops. And that sort of was a really fun transition and led me to wanting to teach about American layer cakes and how to frost them correctly, how to fill them and then decorate them. So that was a really fun transition, that kind of evolution of what happened with my cake story here, that I kind of went from having these cake pop-ups to then doing this cake atelier in my apartment. And those were really fun. Of course, I stopped doing those during the pandemic and have been kind of slow to restart them since we've been back into transitioning back into the way things were before. But I would love to continue doing those. They're kind of a seasonal workshops where I would do one a season. So I'm very excited to restart that.
Well, before we talk more about Sweet Paris, the cookbook specifically, I want to steal the opportunity to talk about Paris a little bit more. And one thing I was curious about from having in my past spent time in Paris and in France, and there's the romantic notion of living in Paris, and as Netflix is exploiting to great effect, but there's also the reality. And I think, you know, certainly your Instagram feed kind of also augments the romantic notion. I don't think you post often about the reality. So I was really curious to ask you, now that it's 10 years on after it was only supposed to be 1 to 2 years, was there a key moment or memory where like reality and romance really, you know, when the romance met the reality for you of, oh, it's not all romantic?
I have had many, many of those moments in my 10 years in Paris. And I can just right at the top of my head think about one of the first kind of like romance kind of fading into reality for me was kind of something that's more surfacey, but I really was shocked at the amount of cigarette smoking that goes on in Paris. And I've had my fair share of cigarette butts being flung from balconies above, landing on me throughout the years. And that was sort of an interesting reality check of how that was such a different thing from where I was coming from. But I would say the biggest sort of romance meeting reality for me in Paris has been, I think I underestimated my grasp of French language, and I've had so many miscommunications and hilarious sort of lost in translations over the years. Even after being here for 10 years, I still struggle with French and its rules and the structure of it. So for me, going into 2024, after 10 years of being here, I'm finally like really trying to buckle down and take it a little more seriously and really try and take French classes again, with a personal goal of being able to one day tell a joke in French and have a French person just guffaw at that joke. I feel like that'll really cement me into French society. So,
well, and of course, you have to say the French sense of humor is quite different too. So, what the French find funny, and to make a French person guffaw, you almost have to change the way you think about what kind of joke you would tell, I think.
Absolutely. And that is the mindset I'm aiming for. So, we'll see if I can make it there.
Yeah. Well, watching Wednesday on Netflix might help. I feel like that's right.
You know, that's on my Netflix queue right now. So I'm gearing up.
The dark zone of what, yeah.
I think, as you mentioned, being Californian as well, we're just very smiley people. And I think that's something that hasn't gone away over the 10 years I've been here, but it is definitely met with a little bit of suspicion.
yeah, definitely. There's, why are you so happy? What is going on?
Dude, you're always smiling.
What drug are you taking? So let's talk about Paris and the holidays. Are you staying around? And do you feel like the city does shut down and you have it more to yourself? Or do you feel like, oh, no, the Parisians are just replaced by even more tourists?
No, actually, we're going to be staying around. We tend to sometimes also, like the Parisians, sort of escape to countryside places. And last year we were in Normandy. We rented a house in the countryside with a fireplace, and it was just, you know, holiday heaven. I just baked every day something different, and we just went on long walks, you know, in the countryside with our dog. But this year we decided we're going to stay in town, and it actually is really lovely. At the end of next week, the Parisians will start leaving en masse to, you know, other parts of France, or if they're going on vacation or headed to the countryside to celebrate the holidays. And the city definitely becomes a very quiet, much like the end of July and the beginning of August in summer, when also the Parisians head out of town for their holidays for a month and everything shuts down. It's a similar feeling the few days before Christmas and the few days after. So we really look forward to the city turning into a little kind of sleepy village again. And while there are tourists here, I would say that it still remains quite very chill and very relaxed in comparison to like this week, which has just been jam-packed with people everywhere, and the metros are full, and all the department stores and shops are busy, and the terraces at the cafes are just jam-packed with people, which is lovely. And everyone's having their, you know, starting to get into like their mulled wine, and you're smelling chestnuts everywhere all over the city being roasted at corners. So it's really a beautiful scene at the moment, especially with all the lights strung up in the different parts of the city. But definitely we're looking forward to the quiet that's going to come at the end of next week.
And have you strategically mapped out what of your favorite shops and restaurants will actually remain open, or are you just going to play it by ear?
So I have actually strategically asked some of my favorite coffee shops who will be remaining open and who will be closing for the holidays. Just I'm one of the strange people who doesn't drink coffee at home but goes out to get it. So I kind of get stranded when all the my favorite local cafes are closed and shuttered. But I have a few that are going to stay open even on Christmas Day, which I was really surprised by, which is not normal here in Paris. Most everything is shut down. However, it is nice to know that all the beautiful hotels, of course, in the city will remain open. All of the palace hotels, if you wanted to treat yourself to like a beautiful goûter, holiday Christmas goûter at, say, the Georges Sank or something like that, they're all open. So that's always good to have as a backup.
That is great advice. And I think you've succeeded in putting the romantic notions back in. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more from Franco-American baker Frank Barron. Stay with us.
It's the final stretch of 2022, and HRN needs your help. Our goal for the winter membership drive is to raise $30,000. Become an HRN member with a donation of any amount at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Through creative, educational reporting, storytelling, and live events, HRN delivers thought-provoking exchanges about the real issues affecting our global food system. Your donation also supports our internship program, an essential part of HRN's work that educates the next generation of journalists. Donate at the $90 level before December 31st, and you'll receive a limited release HRN t-shirt designed exclusively for HRN members by artist Chema Scandal. When you become an HRN member at any level, you'll be the first to know about special events and get news updates created only for Food Radio insiders. Help us meet our end-of-year fundraising goal with your tax-deductible donation. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and become a member today.
Welcome back. We're talking to Frank Barron about his new cookbook, Sweet Paris, Seasonal Recipes from an American Baker in France. So is the cookbook itself about French baking or American baking, or how do you kind of define it?
Well, I'd like to describe it as an American baking book, but with French flair. A number of the recipes are inspired by my favorite French pastries. Like, for example, in the summer chapter, I have a fraisier cake, which is inspired by the fraisier pastry. But I've turned it into a tall layer cake that's filled with layers of strawberry pastry cream, and it's covered in whipped cream frosting. And then there's, like, for example, the Gâteau Opera, which is a very famous pastry here in Paris that I love, that was created here in Paris in honor of the Garnier Opera House. And I've turned that into also like a giant towering American cake filled with chocolate buttercream and coffee. So I think that there's the red line through it is definitely an American style baking, but I've tried to infuse some of the French influences that I've had over the years of living here.
Yeah, I was just struck by how kind of Julia-like that is. You wrote a very French book, but very specifically for an American audience and bakers and marketplace.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this with Julia and how, you know, she came here to Paris and was so struck by the gastronomie and the food and the joy that the French have with cooking and with food and eating, and wanted to, of course, bring that back to an American audience. And I kind of find it funny that in a way, what I'm doing is trying to kind of bring that American kind of cozy baking and layer cakes and those kinds of things to the audience here in France, which is sort of the opposite in a way, but it's kind of a funny thing that I thought about. And while I know my audience for Sweet Paris is large, since it's in English right now, is largely for an Anglo audience and celebrating France and its seasons, it's interesting that when I started to bake here and talk to people about American baking, the French audience and the French customers at the cafes I was doing pop-ups, they were so curious about American baking and asking me like, well, why is the buttercream so sweet? And why are there so many layers, and what's this cake for? And it's just a very interesting thing how we kind of, French pastry is an exotic thing for us, but never stopping to realize that something like a bundt cake is seen as really exotic here. Interesting.
That is great. I like thinking about it. But bundt cakes is exotic.
Right.
I was curious too. So for those who haven't seen the book yet, you should get it. It's beautiful. The photography and the food styling in the book almost tells a story all on its own. And I was curious, did you arrive in Paris? And obviously, as we mentioned, your Instagram feed was sort of the inspiration as well. Did you already have this photographic sensibility, or do you think that's really been something you've refined since being in Paris?
Well, I've always loved photography, and I think in at university I studied art history, and I was always attracted and interested in creating little mise-en-scenes, even from when I was a teenager, and putting things together and photographing them. So I think that I had that sort of passion already, and once I kind of got into the baking and cake making, it just so lent itself so easily to sort of creating these little scenes of a beautiful moment with surrounded by pastry and all the little accoutrements that go with it, like cake plates and, you know, bowls of beautiful fruit or whatever was in season. So I just kind of approached it in that way when we were making the book. And of course, my photographer, Joanne Pye, who's from Vancouver originally and now lives in Paris, she's a food photographer who's just amazing and so talented. And I knew right away when I got the book deal that I wanted to work with her as my photographer. We were friends before that. So we had always jokingly talked about, like, one day if I ever did a book, you're going to shoot it. So it was kind of amazing that that ended up happening. And we worked on the book for over a full year to capture all the seasons in Paris so that she could actually go out and photograph, you know, Paris in the snow in winter and go to the cherry blossom trees in spring to include all of that in the book.
Well, let's talk about that because, as you just said, the book is arranged by and organized by season, and that's one of your themes and things you picked up. So tell us more about what ingredients are seasonal in Paris in wintertime, which is not maybe the most, I was going to use a bad pun, fruitful season. and can you highlight some recipes in the book that you know you really love for wintertime?
Sure. So just this afternoon, I went to the market in my neighborhood to go pick up some things for dinner tonight. And what I saw, I mean, is in wintertime now is just like the markets are just heaving with citrus, of course. That's like the big, most colorful thing at the markets. And beautiful clementines from Corsica with their leaves still attached. And you have lemons from Provence that are at the markets, blood oranges and little kumquats. And then you have, of course, all the beautiful nuts that are in season right now. And of course, the big one being the chestnut that mostly comes from the Ardèche region in the east of France. And the two recipes that come to mind with citrus is there's a lemon meringue cake in the winter chapter. that I, my, so my husband is a big citrus lemon guy and is, you know, not into chocolate and caramel and praliné and all those things, but just loves lemony things. So I sort of made this lemon meringue cake sort of in his honor, because that's his favorite combination. And it's like filled with tart lemon curd and covered in meringue that gets bruleed with your kitchen torch. So you get to have a little action in the kitchen with that one. And the other fruit that was something that I didn't eat in California, which was one of the things that I discovered here, which are persimmons, are really popular in winter, and they call them kaki. And they're just beautiful, large, giant persimmons that are everywhere at the market stalls. And I did do a bundt cake version of a persimmon cake in the book that's very kind of a more simple cake that is very soft, kind of like gingerbread, like a soft gingerbread cake. And it gets dusted with icing sugar at the end. So that was one of my favorite wintertime recipes of using something that's seasonal here.
Great. And where do you know where the persimmons in Paris will come from?
You know, I don't. That's something I've always wondered myself and never have had a conversation with one of the market sellers to ask about that, because I know that it's largely a fruit from Japan and like the Fuyu variety of persimmon. So I've never really found out exactly where in France they're coming from, especially because here everything is always marked as like Corsican clementines or lemons from Provence, and they write it right on the sign. And with the persimmon, I don't ever seem to see where they're coming from. So I'm going to have to make a note to ask my next market visit.
Yeah, I was curious because here in California, they've started, there's more cultivation of persimmons, and although I think they are these Japanese varieties. And I was just curious because they would have to come from some, I think they need a relatively warm climate to grow in, but I could be totally wrong about that. Japan is not so warm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I do here besides baking is I lead some pastry tours. And so I eat either in Saint-Germain-des-Prés or here in the Marais, and I take people around for a few hours to basically just indulge in chocolate and pastry for 2 hours. And I had one yesterday, and it was an American family visiting from New York, and they were just amazed. We walked past a market stall, and there was just like tons of persimmons there. And they were like, "What are those?" And I'm like, "Those are persimmons." And they were like, "We've never seen persimmons that large before." And they're just like giant persimmons. Beautiful. I didn't grow up eating persimmons, so it's kind of a new thing that I'm still kind of discovering how to use them. And sort of like quince, they're a little tricky, but when they ripen, they're just perfect to go inside of a cake batter.
It sounds mouthwatering. And I think I wanted to touch upon that too. I think if you haven't had the chance to visit Paris or spend time there, it is such, everywhere is a visual feast, from the historic buildings to the shop windows to the markets. And I think, I don't know if you wanted to speak to that and it's sort of its influence on your time there and your book and your photography.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's one of the most famous outdoor markets is really close to where I live, and it's the market at the Bastille that takes place on Sundays in the morning, really early in the morning, like 7:30 until around noon. And there's just every imaginable fruits that you, it's just one of those sensory overload moments where you're walking through the market and on either side of you, you have beautiful flowers and breads and cheeses. And then there's just like piles of fruits everywhere. My favorite time to go, of course, is in summer, when you have all the summer berries and of course, here in France, there are about like 50 different varieties of strawberry that are just like piled high. So it's just something that literally the phrase a kid in a candy shop is what it feels like to be at a French market.
And do you think, are the French pâtisseries sticking to strawberries are out of season in the wintertime and you will not see them in the way that you do all over the States?
Absolutely. In fact, my book opens with a little anecdote about how I moved here in 2012 in the middle of January from California. And I remember going to a market and not seeing strawberries and then trying another one and not seeing strawberries. And I was just like, what is going on? And I asked a salesperson at the grocery store, and she was just like, you know, completely dumbfounded that I would be asking for strawberries in January. And she was like, Monsieur, like, it's January, you know, you have to wait until May or June. And this was sort of my first introduction to eating seasonally. I mean, coming again from California, where it's like the fruit basket for the United States, it's, we have everything we want all year round in terms of fruits, pretty much. And so that was sort of a big shock. And I have now, of course, learned to wait like everybody else for strawberry season to come at the end of May and June. And then everybody celebrates and is happy and everything is strawberry this and strawberry that. So that sort of was really something I wanted to weave through the book, at how I kind of learned to celebrate the eating seasonally and celebrating like what can you make with this fruit that are in season. And it's, of course, they're so delicious. And my favorite being fraise de bois strawberries, which are like the little forest strawberries, tiny, tiny little guys that pack a huge punch.
I love that. I think, you know, I've just had some strawberries in Los Angeles, and they were fine and they were better than you'd get elsewhere, but they're not as good as in season. And it really makes things more special when you eat it at the time of year that it was meant to be. It does taste better and taste different, and it sort of feels that much more special.
Exactly. And it's like a very time, sort of like time sensitive thing that you're like, okay, these are here for 3 weeks. I better like enjoy them to the utmost.
So, speaking of enjoyment, and you said you're staying in Paris this year for the holidays. What, have you already planned your table? What do you think you'll be serving for whichever holiday you celebrate, or all of them?
Well, we will be celebrating Christmas. Actually, my husband's family also lives here in Paris. And so traditionally, we will go over to their house for what's here called the Réveillon du Noël, which is celebrated on the 24th in the evening. And Réveillon just basically means like feast. And it's just really is this ginormous feast. French people have often told me that Réveillon de Noël, which is the Christmas feast, is sort of akin to our American Thanksgiving equivalent, as far as like, there's always going to be certain staples on the table. Mm-hmm. And those staples will usually are like seafood platters with oysters and lobster. And there's always going to be lots of winter cheeses, Beaufort cheese, which is a mountain cheese coming with very delicious, hard, like Cocomte type of cheese. And of course, the main courses usually varies, but traditionally we have like sole meuniere with mashed potatoes. And you start, it's a very long evening. So it's like you're eating for probably 3 to 4 hours. It's there's the aperitif, and then it moves into, you know, the main course. And then, of course, what my contribution this year, actually every year, is of course the dessert. And I will be making the quintessential bûche de Noël, or the Yule log. And it's just amazing how many different types of Yule logs you'll find in Paris here. It's a very sort of, I don't want to say competitive pastry, but it's something that all the pastry chefs will, you know, try to outdo each other every year and present their bûche de Noël, and vying for the most beautiful or most complicated flavor combination. The one that I'm going to be making this year, of course, is from my book, and it's white chocolate with mascarpone whipped cream, and then there's a layer of a swirl, I should say, of blackcurrant jam or cassis jam. And it's not easy recipe. It's one that does require a couple of days prep time, but it is sort of the piece de resistance of the Christmas dinner table. So that's something that I'm going to definitely plan to make this year.
It sounds really fun, mouth-watering, and exactly the kind of a dinner party celebration scene that Julia would enjoy. So is your bûche de Noël, is that one recipe that is more French, or is it your American-style take on a bûche de Noël?
There are a few recipes like the bûche de Noël in the book that I chose to really kind of approach with a more purist attitude. So the bûche, I definitely did not sort of tweak with any kind of Americanism, but I did add some things to it that you could, like, for instance, I think for my recipe, there's meringue mushrooms, and I add like some pistachio powder as like moss for the bark. And I think those kind of like going that little extra bit seems a little bit more American. Just kind of take things just a little over the top and push it into a little bit more of a fantasy situation. But because most French families who celebrate with a bûche de Noël, it's going to be really simple. Usually it's chocolate with whipped cream inside. Always, you know, classic and delicious. But I definitely tried to make a little bit more of like this enchanted forest fairy tale situation happen with the bûche, which I did feel was like my American side coming out a bit.
Well, and I think the other thing I was struck by, chances are, would you say, in Paris and actually outside, the bûche de Noël very often will not be made at home. It will be bought from a pâtisserie.
Yes, definitely. Every little boulangerie or pâtisserie in the neighborhood will have their version of the bûche de Noël, and usually even four or five different flavors that you could choose from to find something you like. There's ice cream bûche de Noël. So I would say, yes, most people are picking up their bûche de Noël because the technique of rolling the cake, everybody dreads. And it's a very sort of like flipping a bundt cake out of the pan. It's like, is it going to break? Is it going to work? And so I think the less stress and risk that people can have on Christmas for dinner, I think the better. So I think picking up one is a time-honored tradition here as well.
So if you want to have one at home this year here in the States, there's no shame in ordering one.
100%. My head note, in fact, for the bûche de Noël in my book starts out with baker beware. So just putting that out there.
But if you're looking for a Christmas challenge, it's on.
There are those bakers out there that want that challenge. So there you have it. 3 days of prep time for that one.
All right. You heard it here. We're going to take another break, and we'll be back to hear Frank's Julia moment. Let us know what you think of today's show. Send us an email or voice memo to contact juliachildfoundation.org. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
When you flip anything, you just have to have the courage of your convictions, particularly if it's sort of a loose mass like this. No, that didn't go very well. See, when I flipped it, I didn't have the courage to do it the way I should have. But you can always pick it up, and if you're alone in the kitchen, who is going to see?
From Julia's immortal words, we move into our last segment, which we call the Julia moment. Here's when we ask our guests to share their favorite Julia memory, moment, or how she might have inspired them in their career. Frank, what's your Julia moment?
Ooh, well, I had to go to the first time I ever had a meal at Chez George here in Paris, on the Place de Victoire, which pretty much the first time, I think it was the first year we moved here that winter, I knew about that being one of her favorite restaurants in the city, and I made it a mission to go and have a meal there. And once we finally made it to the restaurant and sat down, it just delivered on every level of what I was imagining of Parisian bistro, brasserie to look like and to smell like. And when they brought, so apparently, from what I was told, this was sort of like Julia's first kind of introduction to sole meuniere, the fish that we mentioned earlier, which is, of course, a white fish just dripping in a bath of butter, and a very traditional fish dish at most Parisian bistros. And so I had my sole meuniere, but what was really one of my Julia moments, and felt that the spirit of Julia was definitely there with us in the restaurant, was when the waiter wheeled out the chariot of cheese. And mm-hmm. I just jaw dropped, not like eyes just bugging out. I don't think I'd ever seen this amount of variety of cheese in my life. I mean, there were at least 20 to 25 different varieties from like almost every region in France, just on display in this just lavish display on this silver chariot that they wheeled out in front of our table. And we just kind of got to pick which cheeses we wanted to try. And I just felt like that was this moment that I could understand that joy of eating something so delicious and discovering something new that I had never tried before. on the plate, and then of course adding in the glamour and of this Parisian restaurant and this beautiful Place de Victoire is stunning in the first arrondissement, in the second, really close to the Palais Royal Gardens. So after dinner, we kind of just strolled through the gardens of the Palais Royal right down to the Seine. So that was one of those magical kind of meals in Paris. And there have been many since then, but that was sort of that first moment that we moved here that I was sort of chasing that Julia moment. And I was, everything was delivered for me as Chez George at that moment.
Oh, that's a picture very well painted. Well, thank you for joining us, and thank you for that Julia moment. It's great to have you on.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. And happy baking to everybody for the holidays.
Yes, we'll need some Parisian magic to carry us through. Thanks, everyone, for listening. For the feed that started it all, you can check out at CakeBoyParis on Instagram and CakeBoyParis.com for more about Frank's workshops and tours of Paris. The book is Sweet Paris, Seasonal Recipes from an American Baker in France by Frank Adrian Baron, with photographs by Joanne Pye. It's available now from Harper Design. You can ask or search for it at your favorite bookseller. Wishing you happy holidays and a bountiful 2023. We'll be back with more episodes in the new year. For all the latest from the Foundation, it's at Julia Child on Facebook and at Julia Child Foundation on Instagram. I'm at T. Shulkin on Instagram. The Julia Child audio clip from The French Chef is used with permission from our friends at GBH. Thanks to my co-producer at the Foundation, Lauren Salkeld, and our sound engineer, Heritage Radio Network, Armin Spengen. Our theme song is New French Horn by Novi Valtorni. We're on the air on Heritage Radio Network on Thursdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, with downloads available soon after wherever you find your podcasts. We look forward to bringing you back into the Foundation's world next season on Inside Julia's Kitchen. Inside Julia's Kitchen is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.